Welcome back to Noble Radio with the Muscle Mob. I'm here with my cohort in crime, John Romano, and Jeff, the producer, and we just got off the phone with the one and only Sean Ray, who's out on the golf course, being a very famous caddy. But for now, we got our next guest on the phone. The guy I'm talking about is a very good friend of mine. He's a two-time Masters National 60-plus overall champ and a two-time Masters 60-plus Pro World Champion. He's also the oldest actively competing IFBB Pro bodybuilder on the circuit. The man I'm talking about is none other than Charlie Arms Urigo. Welcome to the show, Charlie.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Charlie, for those of our listeners out there who may not know who you are, because a lot of them don't, give us a little background on how you got into bodybuilding and where you got that name Charlie Arms from.
Well, I got into bodybuilding a friend of mine a few years ago back in 2003 when I was visiting down in Florida. I haven't seen him for years. He was an old training partner of mine. And I bumped into him. He says that he was sponsoring a bodybuilding show, and I told him, you know, I'm not crazy about bodybuilders, Lester. He said, no, my kids are going to be there. You haven't seen me yet. Come on down. And I went down. It was in Fort Lauderdale. It was the Southern States. And I went and saw him, and he says, no, go inside. You see these old-timers, these 60-year-old times. Go inside, see him. So I went in there, sat down, and it looked really bad. These guys look terrible. So my old lady turned to me and said, you can beat these guys right now if you take off your clothes and get up there. So I said, yeah. So we drove home, and all the way home, she started nagging me about, no, we could do this. You could do this. You could do this. All you need is a diet. You'll see. You could do this. So I was going to turn 60 next year in June, and the show was July. So I said, okay. And I went home. I found this guy, somebody new, and gave me a diet. And then I saw my body make like a metamorphosis, from the caterpillar into a butterfly. I couldn't believe that I had muscles. So I went into the show, and I won that show. I took the overall. And then a judge came backstage. He said, who are you? He said, what do you mean who I am? I said, who are you? He said, I'm a judge. I said, you're a judge? What are you doing back here? He said, no. He said, we never saw you. Where'd you come from? You done this? Where you been on it? I said, listen, fella, I came in here on a dare. He said, you're going to go into the Nationals? I said, what's the Nationals? No, you could win the Nationals at Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yeah, okay, pal, forget it. He says, no, you could do it. So I came back home again, and sure as hell, my wife on the way back started nagging me again. Well, why don't we do the Nationals? You could do the Nationals. I said, get out of here. So she talked me into it. 2004, I went into the Nationals, and I won the Nationals. And I crossed over because that's the first year they were giving a pro card out to the 50s in 2004. So I crossed over. I came in second in my weight class. And I took the overall in the men's, and then no pro card. So I said, forget about this. So then she said, why don't we go back to 2005 and the nag and start again? I got a good woman, but she's relentless, like all women that love their man. So I said, all right, we'll go back to 2005. I said, maybe I'll be in better shape. I'll cross over and get a pro card, and I'll go into the 50s. This time I was going backwards. I came in third. So, I spoke to a couple of the officials. I said, hey, fellas, not for nothing, but no pro cards out to the 60-year-olds. You look at the shape of these 60. They look good. They train just as hard as everybody else, even harder because of their age and the injuries. If they take an overall, give them a pro card. The answer was, who looks like you? I said, no, that's not good enough. That's not a good answer. So about 2 months later, I got a phone call from one of the officials, and he said, listen, we're retroacting you a pro card as of 2004, so you're a pro. So I'm a pro.
Wow.
Charlie, hold on. He didn't answer my main question, which is, how did you get the nickname Charlie Arms?
No, that was your second question, if I'm correct, pal. Maybe getting old, but I'm still pretty sharp. I got my nickname a lot of years ago. There was a fellow who fixed motorcycles repair shop in Mount Vernon in Westchester on Scotch Bridge. And quite a few of the Hells Angels used to go there and get their bikes worked on. And one day I was in there getting my Sportster worked on, and there was a guy, the president, Sandy Alexander, who was a good friend of mine, and he was there. I didn't know him at the time, and I wasn't even introduced to him. And when I was outside the shop, I was showing off to Eddie. I said, Eddie, what's this? And I kicked over my 900 Sportster with my arm. So he got kind of impressed. So I went back a couple of times, and one of the times when I went back, this fellow Sandy Alexander was there again, and I got introduced to them. He says, "Well, that was," I says, "This is," I got introduced by Eddie. He says, "This is Charlie. This is Sandy." And Sandy says, "That was pretty impressive there, Charlie Arms," and it stuck with me ever since.
For those of you who are motorcycle-y challenged, kicking over means starting up for those non-electric bikes. So you kick-started your bike with your arm, basically.
That's correct, John. How you doing, John?
You know, Charlie, I've got to tell you, I've met you a couple times, but the Atlantic City, I was the first time I got to actually spend some time with you, and I'm, you know, you're a gentleman's gentleman, and I'm really honored to have you on the show.
Well, to me, that's a big compliment. Called a gentleman. I've got to be called, if I'm going to be called anything in life, it's a gentleman. Thank you.
So it definitely fits you, Charlie. What's your nationality? Are you, and where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Bronx in Morris Park. My nationality is my mother is Napoli Don Italian, and my father is Colombian from Bogota, Colombia.
You are what your mother is. You're Italian, Napoli Don. Like me.
You're right. I never had a father, but I know that much about him anyhow.
he's got the Latin temper, though.
You know, Italian, as you know, Dave, we Italians are known for our tempers as well.
Charlie, you're somewhat of a legend in the Westchester and Bronx area. In fact, I was speaking to Greg Valentino, who writes for the magazine, the other day, and he told me a great story about he was petrified of you back in the day. Whenever you would train at the same gym as him, he would run off the machine when you would come over and say you wanted to work out. A lot of people don't realize this, but you had over 20-inch arms back in the 70s when only Leroy Colbert was sporting arms that big. What did you do for your arms that made them grow so big?
You know, if I tell people things, they say, "Oh, you got to be kidding me! I worked them every day, Dave." I said, "These things have got to get big. Do you think I knew better? I didn't know any better. I just started learning what to do these last few years, Dave."
No kidding.
But were you really a terror in the gyms back in the day?
You know, everybody likes to tout themselves and stuff like that in certain things, but you know, I'm a no, you're no bull radio, I'm a no bullshit guy. I was in the gyms, you know, there is a story about me. I was in the gyms at East Coast Fitness, and that was their first hardcore gym up here in Westchester County. And I used to see, and I got to call them clowns because they are clowns. They used to come in the gym, you know, with this attitude and who to think they are, if they could squat 500-600 pounds and walk around flexing with their backs wide open, all that bullshit. And a lot of these guys that they didn't know me, I used to walk, when they came in to join that gym, I used to walk up to them and say, "Excuse me, you see what time it is?" They say, "Well, what do you mean?" I say, "You see what time it is?" "Well, yeah, it's 2 o'clock. I train between 2 and 3:30. I don't want to see you here. You got a problem with that?" and a lot of these guys knew me, and a lot of guys, I would just break balls of it. But some of these characters, that's what I'd have to say to them, because I was no nonsense. I don't want to look at these jerks in the gym. That's why people say, "Well, where do you train?" I train in about, well, you know, I'm comped. I know a lot of people. I train in about 5 or 6 different gyms in the area because I hate looking at the same faces of these clowns every day. They all got these attitudes like somebody owes them something, you know, because they train hard and they look good. I understand that you do train hard and you do look good, but, you know, you don't push it in people's faces. You know, I wrote about it. I wrote a couple of articles for MD. You fellas know about it. It's on my website. About bullies in the gym, you know, and that's not where it's at in the gym, but be it as it may, this is what it's like in gyms.
Yeah, definitely. Charlie, let's go back to an earlier stage in your life. You know, you had, by all accounts, quite an exciting life. Give us some of the highlights of your younger years. You know, Dave tells me you had a pretty insane-looking boat and some custom Corvettes.
Before I got all taken away from me, I had all the toys. I worked hard. I had 3 corporations. I had a chemical company. I did the trucking company out of Port Newark, the piers, and I used to deliver sealed containers to the warehouses with my trucks. And I also had a construction company. And I had a few dollars, and I bought all the toys I got rid of. My boat was named On Distance, and my cars were named Sea Arms. I guess you would say it's a big ego thing. Well, then again, fellas, guess what? The last three letters of my name is E-G-O.
Eurego.
Yeah, Eurego. What kind of boat was it, Charlie?
It was, you know what it was? It was a prototype. It was a 400 Express Cruiser. They only made three in the world. One was in Spain, one was in California, and one was in Florida. The one I liked in Florida had shipped to Lindenhurst over here in Long Island. It was a prototype. It was a 400 Express Cruiser yacht. It was a 2 409s inboard gas engine, and it was quick.
If you go to his website, CharlieArms.com, you can check out some of the pictures of him on the boat. It looks like a pretty insane boat.
I'll bet.
It was a female magnet.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I was partners in a Magnum, in a 41-foot Magnum with two other guys, and all I remember doing is shoveling money into that thing. I don't remember it magnetizing any girls towards it.
Well, I'll tell you, you talk about shoveling money. You know, when I bought the boat, I had money at the time, and a guy said to me, he says, when I stepped on the boat, I said, I'll take it. He says, oh, you've operated, you know, big boats before. I said, well, how big is this thing? He says, this is 47 foot. I said, well, okay, I guess it's big. He said, well, wait a second, you never operated a boat before? I said, no. I says, I've never even been on a boat except like the ferry. I'm from the Bronx. I said, I've never been on a really boat. I never went fishing in my life. So you do know what took place next, don't you? I would go out there, drink my face off, and start banging into everything. So I had it docked in a marina, and I also had a space in a little slip in Sea Ray, which was down the canal, and I used to pull in there every week because I'd bang into people's boats and do all this kind of stupid shit, but I had a lot of money at the time, and I used to just give them, how much do you think that's worth to fix your boat? Oh, $1,000? Okay, here's $1,200. Stories, I mean, it's
and he's got 20-inch arms and he's drunk, so, like, you know, what are you going to do?
Charlie, let's talk about another part of your history. You don't hide the fact that you went to prison for over 7 years of your life. Give our listeners a little idea of what you were in there before, and tell our listeners about the day you got arrested, because I think that was a pretty good story.
Hey, Dave, not for nothing, but you gave me an extra year. I feel like I'm doing a time right now by just saying it.
Well, you know, you're in good company, Charlie, because both of us are ex-cons, too, so, you know.
But wait a second, fellas. No. I went in for lending money. I didn't go in for any drug dealing.
Me neither. I didn't go in for any drug dealing.
What'd you go in for, John? Let me do an interview here. What'd you go in for?
Closer to you, I went in for a wire fraud deal.
Oh, that's okay.
A lot of guys said it was respectable what I did.
Listen, did you make any money?
Yeah, I made a lot of money.
Then it was respectable.
It took them 2 months to take all the shit away from me.
Did we lose him?
Charlie? No, I'm still here.
So what would you want to give us a little idea of what happened to you when the day they arrested you?
Yeah, they kicked down my door with a no-knock search warrant, and they were unlawful then, those no-knock search warrants. But the feds don't worry about little things like that. And they took me away, and I never saw light again. And I didn't know what it was for. They said extortion, extension of credit. Okay, what's that? Oh, loan sharking, supposedly. So then I went away for that. But that's only the beginning. I mean, Dave, we could spend a lot of hours on this phone right now. You know it. What happened to me. I mean, there comes the feds. I represented myself at trial. I made case law at trial. I did the pro se. I'm probably the only guy that anybody knows that signed his autograph famously and infamously. Because when I made that case law in prison, the guys, when they saw it before me, and it came out in a soft-covered book when I made the case law, and I freed a lot of guys from prison, you know. It was called the Pinkerton Liability Theory, but we'd have to go into that. But if anybody's curious about the case law I made, it's 853-853 Fed Supplement, SUPP period, at 646. 8:53, Fed sub at 6:43. That's the case law I made. You could read all about it. Everything that happened. I didn't want to put me away for 38 years for lending money. We could go into this. But anyhow, I caught the government a year later presenting false evidence at my trial to convict me. That's right. You heard right. One of the few cases ever where they got caught presenting false evidence to convict me at my trial.
Wow.
And it made the cover of the Law Journal in September of... 97.
Why did they do that, Charlie?
Because of a thing called they wanted my ass because of reputation. I never got found guilty of anything. I had some juvenile stuff, bullshit. But when they want you, they come and get you. You know, because you got these rats, these federal informants out there that will make you, you're nobody. They'll make you in Don Cheech kabooch. They'll make you out as Don Cheech kabooch. Yeah. and whatever the rat says is gospel. You understand? So that's how it works. But be it as it may, you know, I defended myself, and they started, you know, to tell you a quick story. You know, we like to say it doesn't get any worse. I remember laying in MCC, Metropolitan Correction Center in Manhattan, and they were building the courthouse across the street, and we had a riot on our floor, so they locked us in for 2 days, and they were building this a courthouse, and they shut down the water, so... You got to picture this now. You got a celly with you. We're both shitting in a toilet bowl for 2 days, and it's hot. It was those three hot days in 1994 in August that it was 96, 95. It was brutal in there. And I'm laying on the top bunk, and I says, "Jesus, I just blew trial. I got 8 years for that. It don't get any worse." Should have never said that. Knock on the door. "I got mail, Rigo." So my cellie downstairs in the bunk down below grabs it to me, gives it. I open it up. Another indictment facing another 25 years in another district. So I said, "Well, I'll never say that again." So when you say it gets worse, it could always get worse.
Yeah.
Wow.
I got hit with superseders. I got hit with all kinds of stupid shit because I made that case law at trial, and they wanted to light me up, and they almost succeeded, fellas.
Wow. Yeah, they can, they don't play fair. I know that.
Well, guess what? That's why I'm a good boy today. Mind my business. I do what I got to do. I stay home. I got a lovely old lady, and I don't go nowhere. It, you know, every day now, I remember, Dave, you asked me, I said, how did your training go for this at your age, Charlie? I said, well, let me tell you, you need a lot of rest. You got to stay in the house. Don't go out. Don't party. No nothing. I mean, every day is Groundhog Day. You get up at a certain time. You train at a certain time. You eat at a certain time. So if it's at 10:30 at night, my friends know that I'm dental flossing. That's what
Oh my God! You know, growing up in New York, in the 70s and 80s, you know, we were all privy to a guy on TV called Crazy Eddie with the electronics store, the lunatic.
Hey, wait a second! I got a great story about him.
That's what I'm going to ask you.
I met him in prison. I goofed on him. He was online serving the food at MCC. Somebody said, "That's Crazy Eddie." I said, "So I'm going to break balls now." So I walked up and said, "Hey, you, come here. You Crazy Eddie?" He says, "I said, you owe me $20. I said, "I brought back this friggin' 8-track recorder. You took my 8-track recorder. Said you're gonna, you never sent it back by mail to me." So we became friends then. And then when I was in prison up in Otisville, New York, he used to work Jewish food when they serve
kosher. Kosher.
Kosher. He worked at a kosher. He had part of the kitchen that was kosher. So I was washing windows then. You know what I mean? Like outside, inside. So I was. I only had. See, when you go somewhere, they lock you in, and then you ask to get out, and you can't get out. You know, unless there's a move on. But I could get out because I'm washing windows. So I got to wash the outside of the window. So first, when I met him, I would go into there, and he'd have these tomatoes, and he'd have garlic and stuff like that. He's preparing. I would steal it while I'm washing, and he would turn around and say, "Did you see any tomato?" I said, "I didn't see nothing." Because I was able to get out, not going to win the tell the guard, "Open the door, I got to get out." And I would pass it off to somebody else, you understand, the stuff that I'd steal from him. But he was too afraid to say anything to me, so make a long story, realize it. And he says to me, "I just got to ask you one thing," he says. "Where the hell do you put it?" He said, I look to see where it is because you took so friggin' much stuff, but I can't see it on you. I was good. Yeah, Crazy Eddie was a cool guy. He also had his case overturned. You know, he came back. He stayed in Israel, and he had a lot of money. But his daughter was very seriously ill in New York, and he came back. He's really quite a man. He's a good guy. Very smart.
Well, were you ever in jail with John Gotti?
Yes. You know something funny to say? Yes, I was. Back in '97, when I first came in, I was on his floor at MCC, and the guy was as amazing as he was. People were right about that. He was very, very smart, very, very intelligent. You know, he'd be at the end of the tier, and we'd sit at his table. And one story was funny because I had my friend and partner who knew him at the time, and I sat at the table, and they were talking, and he says to me, he says, "Where are you from?" I said, "The Bronx." He said, "The Bronx? There ain't nothing but punks in the Bronx." So I looked at him. So my friend, very smart man, kicked me under the table because I got a mouth. You know, nice, I would have came back. He kicked me under the table to keep my mouth shut. And he ribbed the shit out. I was a big guy. But you know, I got back at him in a way by saying, "John, you want to train with me?" Because I used to do all these kinds of push-ups, all these kinds of chins, all these kinds of crazy shit. He used to look at me and say, "You're nutty. That's too much. You do too much." He said, "You kill yourself. You don't do that much." Of course, he thought he was, you know, did whatever he did. But he was a cool guy. I like John. But anyhow, when he found out I was from Bronx, rubbed me. Punks. I never ran across a tough guy from the Bronx in my life. They're all punks. In fact, even the faggots. He was a big, huge ball buster. This went on all day. This was time to lock in, and he come by my cell. He says, "Hey, Charlie." He says, "I was born on Allerton Avenue." That's in the Bronx.
In the Bronx.
Tom was a cool guy. Got all the mail. Once in a while, he used to say, "Come on, go in." And it's the best part. I was sitting in this cell with him, and he'd be laying across the bed, and I'd be on a little folding chair, and we'd all be almost like touching legs because the cells are small. And you see him all over the television. Like, I'm sitting there with this guy, and he's all over the television, and sneakily I look to the right, and there he is to the right of me, this guy. Very infamous man. But I would open up his mail, and he got one constant letter from this woman. She would say to him, "John, I know you're a very honorable man, and you have children. Do you know my daughter's husband beats her up? Do you think you could just send a couple of guys around the door?" All the mail that he used to get from women all over, what, the country? No, all over the world, pal. Believe me, this guy, he got duffel bags, sacks full of mail. But just to digress for a second, I want to give a shout-out to the armed forces, these brave, brave fellas who risk their lives overseas there, who are in the service for their country. They're a bunch of great, honorable guys. Ain't it great that we have such a bunch of fellas like this protecting us?
They're real tough guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, John, you just said a mouthful. Those are the real tough guys. Everybody wants to be a tough guy. Tough guy. Just go, like my son, he wants to be a tough guy. Go join the service. You know something? I'm going to tell you something, fellas. No bullshit, because there's no bullshit radio. I went in, I was 17 at the time. I wanted to try and get my mother's permission to join. I went in when I was 17, and when I went in there, I had a real good build. And I was lifting weights for a while, but I had asthma. I was never a good athlete. And I went in there, I wanted to join, I wanted to see the world, I wanted to fight for our country in Vietnam. Guys are coming back telling great stories. So I got to do this. So I went in there, and I wanted to join, and I went for the Navy. Well, you know what happened? Because I never went to school, because I only went up to sixth grade, I was a functional illiterate. So they one-wide me. Then I couldn't join.
Wow.
So then I went back when I got my, they used to send you a card, a draft notice card. I said, this is good. I said, now they got to draft me. I went by, took a test, I failed that test too. So I really never made it because I was a friggin' illiterate. But I admire those fellas who do that. Like you say, Johnny, and I appreciate what you said. Those are the real tough guys, all these kids, and they're just wonderful. And I just wanted to give a shout-out to them.
Good.
Very well said, Charlie. Let's talk about your Masters Pro World Championships in the 60 and over class. You won, that was your second Masters Pro World title, but the show I'm talking about is 2 weeks ago at the Atlantic City. You won the 16-over. Vince Taylor won the 15-over. My question for you, Charlie, is how did it feel to stand up on stage with a guy you probably were reading about while you were sitting in the can?
You know, it is amazing. I didn't look at men's magazines in a can, Dave.
I know they didn't have any women's magazines. Yeah. That, for sure.
You're wrong. No, I had women's magazines. Leave me alone. Don't go down that road, please. Listen to me. You know something? This guy is such a class act, this Vince Taylor. I don't know how he is to everybody else. It doesn't matter. The guy didn't know me from a hole in a wall, and I'm sure I didn't impress him, but he impressed me. He is such a gentleman. He is, like I said, class act, and it was my pleasure to meet that guy. Believe me.
Wow. He is. He's an amazing guy.
And he started telling me stories about God, how he, I don't know, you guys, I don't know, it's off-the-wall stuff. He was telling me that he won and that he said, okay, we're going to UPS you your trophy. I don't know what the organization that was, but it wasn't this one or something. In fact, Dave, I happened to mention to you that they did it to this guy. But, again, he is such a classy a human being, and it was my pleasure. You know, this sport has classy guys in it, you know, but I'm not familiar with any of these classy bodybuilders. Like, I'll ask Dave or I'll ask Steve. I say, how is that guy? Is he a nice guy? Nah, the guy's an asshole. I don't know. you know, I'll get from somebody, he's a real gentleman, Charlie, class guy. I want to meet that guy. I want to see what he's all about. And most of the time, they're not full of themselves. Dave, you know I'm not full of myself. I'm not down that road. People say, yeah, this about me and that about me and this about me, you know. Yeah, okay, so what? If anything, I want to be inspiration to people. There's nothing that makes me different from anybody else. The only thing that makes me different is I'm willing to do what other people are not willing to do. I'm a grandfather, but I'm not going to sit with my grandchildren. I go out and I kill myself in that gym. I told you, fellas, it's a true labor of love. And the best example that I've ever seen of a true labor of love, and I've said it a few times, I said it in the trenches, is you take these old people that'll sit on a bench in a rocking chair, and it'll be 90 degrees out, the sun will be blazing, they're in the shade, and all of a sudden they get up and they go into a garden, and they'll start gardening, moving rocks, and digging dirt, and planting stuff for hours, sweating their ass off, and then go back on that rocking chair and feel like they're going to drop dead. But it's a true labor of love, just like weightlifters that are into it. If they're not so much into themselves and they just love the sport, a lot of times I'll be training. You've seen how I train, Dave, in my video.
Oh, yeah.
How I train in the trenches. See what happens when you get old, fellas? See what happens when you get old? A senior moment. You witnessed it live on Bull Radio. I just caught a senior moment. I forgot what I was going to say.
Talking about the labor of love and working
labor
out.
Of love.
It's just a true labor. Oh, and if a person is not full of themselves, I respect them even more. I just like to inspire people. That's all. The only difference is I'm willing to do what other men ain't willing to do at my age. That's the only difference. That's it.
Charlie, speaking of people who are full of themselves, I know you know you've I've seen you judge a few shows, and you're a guy on the inside. You know what's going on. I wanted to ask you what you thought of King Kamali's posing routine at the Atlantic City Pro.
Oh, don't go there. Oh, Jesus. Thong Man? Is that what his nickname now is Thong Man? I mean, this is, you know, I judge these shows, and I'm not going to say who I'm next to. I get sick when these guys start touching themselves. What are you going to say? They're in touch with their feminine side of them. They're touching their thighs. They rub their hands over their ass up there. What is that? And then the best part is they wave to the audience like, come on, applaud me. What? Wait a second. We're not here to perform for you. You're here to perform for us. Do something good and we'll applaud you. Jesus Christ, not for nothing. Seriously, fellas. I mean, I've seen amateurs do that shit. They're not up there on the stage first time, and they're starting to wave their, come on, give me applause. That makes me sick. It turns my stomach. That touching themselves, and all of a sudden, I see, what is that shit? Excuse me. Well, I don't understand what that is. I mean, it's like the guys in the gym. You remember Eiffelman? Was it George Eiffelman? You remember him, fellas?
He's an old-timer, yeah.
He's an old-timer.
I lived down in Vegas for a while. So he had a gym in Vegas, and I was with my friend Mo. And there was a guy on the bench going, rah, rah. Mo turns to me and says, Charlie, watch this. No, I don't know what I'm looking for. All of a sudden, I see this little man run out of an office, jump on the bench of the guy's up. He says, hey, disconnect your vocal cords. Well, get the hell out of this gym right now.
But Charlie, why do you think this guy places so well?
You know, I don't know the sport that well, fellas. You know, you ask me questions, I really can't.
You're a judge.
I don't know something. I've never judged him, because if there's a place worse than last...
Oh, God. Okay.
And you know, Dave, I'm mad at you, and you did apologize because you brought it on disrespect, though, being disrespectful, rather. I told you. I said you spent 8 minutes on a guy, and you never talked about Vince Taylor. Never mind me, but Vince Taylor won something, too. And I understand your limited time and the program, and I understood it. Then I understood once you said what happened. But, they do this stuff where somebody prepared it, whatever it is, I don't know. But to spend all that time on that clown, that's a clown. You know what I mean? He's just full of himself. I don't know what he thinks he is. I don't know. I don't want to figure the guy out. I really don't even want to talk about the guy. You guys got me. You know what I mean?
We're
that
done.
Guy was
We're
in the gym, and I said, he was being one of the guys. I say, you see what time it is?
Yeah, this is when you train. Charlie, other than not training while you're in the gym, what other interesting rules of gym etiquette do you have?
You know, a lot of people, they just have absolutely no gym etiquette. I mean, you'll be doing a set that walk right in front of you. Or they'll stand next to a mirror while you're in front of the weight rack. Or you're carrying weight, they won't move out of your way. I mean, it borders on stupidity. I mean, how are you raised? I mean, you know, it's nice to be a gentleman. Be courteous in a gym. I mean, you see these people moaning and groaning, ain't handling any weight. They just want the attention, so you know what they're all about. But as far as gym etiquette goes, it's just all about being courteous. That's all.
A lot of non-courteous people in these gyms. You're right about that.
There's not enough gentlemen in the world, is what it comes down to.
Johnny, that's another mouthful you said. You got a lot of good sayings there. It comes down to, you're right. It happens to come down to a lot of people are jerk offs. I don't know if they don't have nobody guiding them or anything, but it's just it's nice to be a gentleman. That's all.
It is. It feels good.
Especially
Charlie,
people,
I want to thank you for, we got our next guest holding, but you were, I can't even describe your appearance. I think the listeners are going to really enjoy everything you had to tell us. You've got quite a story. I'm hoping that John's going to be able to do an article, full-length article on you for the magazine, because you got a lot more to tell, I know that.
Are you guys paying me for that?
Did you ever hear MD doesn't pay anyone? We're cheap bastards.
Gee, how did I know that? But I just wanted to hear, let the audience hear about MD. I can see my cheap bastards.
We'll have them take up a collection.
Nah, I don't need no collections, please.
Yeah, that might get misconstrued as something it's not.
I'm old enough to steal now. I don't need no collections.
Well, Charlie, thank you very much for stopping by, and we'll hope to get to see you at an upcoming show in New York, probably a little later in the year.
All right, fellas. You've been really nice. Thank you very much. And to your audience, thank you for being patient with me. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Charlie, thank you very much.
Well, John, he's one of a kind, that's for sure.
Awesome guest. You know, when you see a guy that's, his age, I should say, it gives us hope. I mean, I always wonder, how we've been training all our lives, what we're going to look like when we're in our 60s, 70s, whatever. There's not too many guys we have to look to. Jack LaLanne pushes the extreme end in the 90s, but when you see a guy like Charlie Arms walking around at 65 years old with 21-inch arms, I mean, it gives you hope,
The guy's incredible. He's one of a kind, really.
He really is. And it's a nice, nice guy, a true gentleman.
Yeah.
I really like that guy.
Well, let's get to our next guest, because she's been holding and very patient.